So what's everybody's favorite type of tie? I prefer a single Windsor myself. That's my go-to when I'm tying.
That's a good knot. That's a good knot. I just go for your standard, you know, dad knot, I guess I'd call it, because that's how my dad...
That's what the single Windsor is. That's the dad knot. It's just a 1, 2, 3 dad done. Knot.
Yeah.
There's one I want to learn how to do that I don't know how to do, and it like makes this like sort of braiding look on the top. It's a really complex knot, and I was like, that looks sweet, but that looks like a lot of time.
Oh, man, I can't do a lot of stuff. I'm very busy. And speaking of very busy, what's up, fandom? My name is Josh, and today I've got some special guests joining me once again. I've got Corey Phillips.
How you guys doing? Welcome, welcome.
And I've got Bill Wolkoff.
Hello, this is me in my dad knotted tie.
Yeah.
Everybody wearing ties for the audio listeners, because I mean, why? Because Bill wears ties, and that's just a thing that happens. So Bill, we're here. We're going to talk about season 2 of Strange New Worlds. First off, I want to get this out there. Corey and I talked about it when we had a thing. I want to play you a clip, and I want you to tell me how close I was. Okay, I just need you to tell me how close I was here. All right.
Okay.
As we get to explore in this series, which is exciting.
I'm ready for the space stand up episode. There'll be a musical episode in season 3, because that's just the way it usually works out. We've not had a Trek musical episode. I want you guys to be the first Trek musical episode. Like, you should push for that. I'll allow it, Bill. If you can
you'll
push
allow
for
it. Us,
if you'll pay, push for, you know, I don't know, Strange New Worlds, the music. I don't know what that would be. Some sort of organism, I'm sure, kind of like gets inside. Everybody starts singing.
Well, I'm glad you'll allow it. It's nice to know that Josh Kane and What's Up Fandom would be down for that.
So Bill,
I remember that.
How was I on? Was I there? Like where were we on this? So how did the Star Trek musical episode come about?
Well, yeah, I remember that conversation we had. Well, although I completely blocked it out, I think, because I was shitting my pants when you asked me all those questions. Trying to be expressionless. We were deep into making the musical when you asked me all of that. And I mean, I think you can hear it in my voice.
Oh, dude.
My
on the video on YouTube, you just go, it's just like stone.
Which is somehow more telling.
How do I say nothing, you know? I can't remember where we were in the process, but we were deep into that musical when you asked me all that. And
fantastic.
My first thought was, okay, it's in the air. Yes. Or somebody leaked something to you from set. Who the hell was it?
No, that was just me thinking. Cause I was like, it would be cool. Like, cause like you guys have like in season 1, there were some really cool episodes and it looked like it was going more out of the box than what we had seen in other Star Trek series. And so that's why I was like, okay, for season 2, I would love like a musical episode would be absolutely phenomenal. So
we talked about it for season 1 even. And we also talked about how season 1 it would have been way too soon.
100%.
But we talked about, oh, wouldn't that be cool if we could do that, but not yet. And then the first week that our writer's room resumed for season 2, Akiva Goldsman and Henry Myers said, we want to try to do a musical this year. And I was kind of tamping it down, but inside I was saying, yes, tamping it down because I wanted to be the one to write it. Usually we start each season with a blue sky where for a couple of weeks we talk about anything, and in that time period part of our jobs is like we all come in with 5 pitches, and very very rarely do those pitches actually make it into the show. It's just like that serves as a springboard, and sometimes pieces of them come in, or you know, It just inspires us into another train of thought. It really is a group effort, our you know, writing room process. But when we were set off to do pitches, I thought, well, everybody's going to be pitching on the musical, so I got to go in hard on the musical. And I was the only one that pitched a musical episode. I had some experience doing musical episodes with from Kipo, which is a non-musical musical, and I deeply love musicals. So I went in and pitched hard on that, and they're like, all right, you can write it. I mean, it's a long process. Henry and Akiva usually don't decide who's going to write each episode until a couple months in, once, you know, stories are more broken, and then they try to, you know, generally plot out who's doing what. I in that pitch, I wrote, you know, like, basically drew on a big flag, please let me write this goddamn thing. And then I was lucky, Dana Horgan, who I wrote the episode with, she hadn't joined our staff yet. She came in, she just had a baby. So she came in to season two a little bit late, and it was her first season. But Dana and I had worked together previously on Once Upon a Time. We deeply bonded over musicals. We sat next to each other in that writer's room. And that was when this tiny little musical called Hamilton was really just...
Oh, I've never heard of it.
That's the one with...
Is it the one with all the kids?
That's the Shakespeare one.
Yeah, that is right? The Shakespeare
yeah.
one.
Yeah. Yeah, Shakespeare. Yeah, so we... when she joined the staff... it was, I knew two things. I knew, like, one, like, I'm going to be writing that with her, and thank God, because she's an amazing writer, and you need multiple voices on that to really round out everything that you do. And also, if I didn't fight to get her writing it with me, I would be a dead man. fortunately, that wasn't a fight at all. Like, it was pretty obvious, okay, these two need to write this episode together. So, that's the brief story of how we got into the musical episode. Improbable.
It turned out unbelievable, like, yes. Unbelievably, incredibly. Me and my wife were convinced, like, that maybe some of them were not singing. Like, it was, you'd brought in somebody, and then she did, because she's used to be a reporter. She went and did the research, like, no, I think most of them are singing. They're actually doing their parts. And I was like, that's wild.
All of them, yeah. So Tom Pulse and Kay Hanley, who were from the band Letters to Cleo, and they've also done TV musicals before. They did a lot of the music on My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. We brought them in to do the songs and lyrics, which meant that Dana and I were working with them very closely from the beginning. And before we even started fully breaking the story, Tom took a trip to Toronto and interviewed everybody in the cast to see, just to get a brief, you know, gauge of their musical abilities. And he came back. Yeah, we knew that Celia, Celia Rose Gooding, a jagged little pill, and she's nominated for a Grammy and a Tony. So she's like, we knew she was a ringer, and we knew the episode was going to, you know, be her episode, really, and centered around her. But we also wanted it to be her episode, but also really an ensemble musical. So, and Chrissy, we knew that she would be able to do it, although she's got an album out, more than one album out, but she hadn't done any of that before this episode. She was, she did a lot of dance before Star Trek and loved singing, but not really sung professionally. And I mean, she knocked it out of the park.
That's got to be scary. Man, that's got to be a wild jump from, like, just like, oh, I like doing this thing, to probably one of the most iconic episodes of Star Trek that's ever like been filmed. And like, that's a huge jump. That's a wild jump. I'd be terrified out of my mind. Like, that's good honor. That's awesome.
Yeah. And we gave her a massive song to do as well. Tom did not hold back on that song. That is a song that requires levels and range, and it was an immense pressure. She did it amazingly, but that was not an easy song to get for somebody who had never sat in a booth and really recorded a song like that before. Now she's seeing her record, I was like, oh, this, I am sitting here with a superstar. That's really cool to get to see that. But anyways, in that first trip that Tom made, he interviewed everybody and he came back and he said, everybody can do it. Some people are going to have to be pushed a little bit Anson singing is not first and foremost him. And boy, did he do an amazing job with his number. Ethan too. Ethan had never recorded a song before. Jess had never recorded a song before. And they all got in there and they all did it.
That's so wild because it's a bunch of people's first times. Like, I can't even imagine. That's wild. What a talented cast. Holy crap.
Was the musical episode of Hell on Wheels. I don't know if you guys saw, there was not a musical
episode. I missed that episode.
No, that would have been amazing. Just like
all Anson never told us about that.
Anson on a horse just going, just like singing a love ballad. That would have been Hell on Wheels missed out.
That's Josh's Crusades. He's going to just try to put in musical episode in all of your IPs now. Like, that's what's going to be.
That's the goal. But yeah, so Bill, how many episodes did you end up writing on for season two?
Well, I wrote the musical with Dana and Those Old Scientists with I don't know why I just pointed and a thumbs down emoji came up. What the? And it happened again.
What is happening?
Stop that. That's my hand.
What
gesture.
Is going on? Why
that is
you...
not me. You know. Not a thumbs down to anybody. Nobody listening understands this, but
that was bizarre. I can't do that.
He's saying something, but something.
Zoom is very judgy.
Oh, man. Yeah, I do not hands, like what you're saying.
Bill,
no.
Like hands in your lap. Hands in your lap. That way
well,
you know.
I guess. I guess Zoom doesn't like that I wrote Those Old Scientists with Kat Lynn, but I was, you know, happy to do that. And I will also say that we have a writing process where all of us, you know, we all break the stories together. It's different for each episode, but in a lot of the episodes, like we all pitch in sometimes just where we are, like other people will redo scenes. So every episode has been touched by everybody in a certain way. And I think that's part of the strength of our series. It's part of our process. Some more than others, you know, some, it depends on the episode really, but like Those Old Scientists, that's definitely, I mean, Kat and I, you know, like we wrote the draft, but that we brought in Mike McMahon. We brought in Mike did a lot of work. We depended on him because, you know, Kat wrote on Lower Decks and is a consultant still on Lower Decks, but Mike's the creator of that show. So we really needed, you know, him to help us figure out how Boimler Beckett's Mariner's voices would translate to live action, but still be Boimler and Mariner. So that was, you know, that's an episode that a lot of people contributed to. It's also a comedy, and like, it's good to have, like, you know, everybody pitching jokes. That was also a very heavily improvised episode. A lot of, you know, the dialogue came from, which is how Lower Decks works.
I knew it. Me and Danny knew it. Me and my wife were both improvisers, and we were like, this feels like a lot of this is improvised. I knew it.
Yeah, we were able to, you know, and credit to Henry and Akiva for opening up that style for this episode, which it needed. We typically do not do that on Strange New Worlds. But to bring, you know, this is that's an episode where two you know, comedy characters from the future are trapped in a drama show. But that's what they do improvise. I got to see this firsthand when they recorded their pieces for the animation segment. We had Mike and Brad Winters, who's another voice director over there, and Anne Frakes was there too. It's letting Jack and Tawny just go off and off and off. And also Jerry O'Connell and Eugene Cordero, everybody would start with the lines in the page, and then, you know, they would get pushed and pushed and pushed. And you just discover new amazing gems that way. So we wanted to have that energy in the live action side too, which required our cast to find a way to meet it. Part of the episode is about that, you know, that meeting of those two tones, this disruptive force that comes into the Enterprise, and it required our cast to think on that. Our cast is incredibly funny and is great with comedy, and also met that, while still being true to Strange New Worlds. So I'm going to give that two thumbs up and see if that happens. It gave me.
Mine doesn't do that.
We can't do that. Bill's got like special Zoom. Special powers.
Bill? Was that because that was one of the things that me and my wife noticed, is that there was a very different a tonal difference between the two shows, in a sense that like Lower Decks is just so much faster. Like, it is a very fast show. The dialogue is very fast. The deliveries are very fast. And it was never more obvious than whenever they did, when we do this crossover episode, because the dialogue for the actual cast of Strange New World is much slower. It's so much slower. And it's so stark. So did you find that you kind of, as writers and also in the performance section, had to speed them up, slow them down to try to meet in the middle? Or did you just embrace the collision between the two like tonal speeds?
I mean, you're right. It is on Lower Decks. It's like a machine gun firing at you of jokes that just it never stops. And that's the style of the show. It was a challenge. Like, Jack and Tawny had to adjust a little bit. And that's why I think it was Jack and Tawny who both improvised the line, and they talk so slow when they're in the shuttle.
Was that a call out to like the? Was that a call out to the? Yeah,
I mean, that's the kind of thing that comes out of like, you know, that you can only get if you're improvising, because like that's not like, it's so meta and so, there's no way any of us really would have realized on the page how differently they, you know, those two tones were until we saw it in person, and in that speech they were complaining and scared about like all the many ways in which things were different. Jack and Tawny just reached to like how different it is performance wise and it was great. It was hilarious.
And it's such a fun concept in comedy. It's like, okay, we all as the audience feel this, let's point at it. You know, like, they were really, it was a really good voice of the audience joke that I appreciate, because I was like, they said the thing that I was thinking. Yeah.
You guys did a lot of really cool stuff in season two. Like, the episodes are different. Like, those old scientists, like, we've had, you know, Star Trek cameos where, like, you'll have some people from DS9 show up on Voyager and vice versa. But not really, too concurrent at the same time shows that are, and like, we just pull people from them and then have to send them back. I thought that was a really good, and honestly, it's probably one of my favorite episodes this season. I mean, I love Lower Decks, and I love this one. So getting to see them interact was really, really fun. But then, yeah, you also have, you know, your musical episode. You have the episode with the Klingon general guy. That's just tough to watch.
Under the Cloak of War?
That's like, what do you do in this situation? Like, what do you do in that situation? It's a very heavy episode.
I'm not gonna lie, it sold me on the Doctor. Like, I was not, you know, we're all Star Trek fans. We have a hierarchy of characters that we like. And I that episode really sold me on his character. Like, really, just that it's so well done and so incredible. Like, that I was like, I know, I like him. I like this character. I'm on board.
I love that you're saying that. I mean, it's a real tribute to Babs and the performance that he brought, and to Jeff and Davey. Jeff was the director. Davey wrote that one. But like, Babs really, you know, distinguished that. But also, I love that that's the episode that's, you know, sells you on the doctor when he kills the man at the end.
I know. I loved it. Made him so, I don't know. Like, I for some reason, like, I can't even explain to you. Like, it was just so compelling. Like, the entire time, like, and I must say that Strange New Worlds from, you know, my mom was a Trek fan. I'm a Trek fan. Like, I started with TNG, and then I've watched, you know, like, Strange New World is perfect in every way, especially from a writing standpoint. And the writing of the episode, the writing of every episode, has been so incredibly compelling. Like, I did not know how it was going to end. I did not know. I was like, is he going to kill him? Is he not going to kill him? And his performance, you don't know. And up until the moment it happens, you have no idea if he is or is not. And like, there's something that's so incredible and brilliant about that kind of writing and about that kind of performance. Being able to, as an audience, watch, like, me and my wife were genuinely just like, oh, it felt like he was going to, it really did lead up to it. But also I felt like he was going to back out of it at any time. Just the inner conflict was played so well. It was unbelievably flawless. Like, writing across the board was just,
Yes,
so
season.
Yeah,
two
no, I love that episode.
Yeah, season two. Like, season one, loved season one, but season two just had that little like edge to it. That season one had some like really great episodes, but then season two just like kicks it up a little notch too. Because then, because we also have the one where they're on the planet and they all lose their memories.
Oh my!
That one was like, I'm just like, that's such a good. Like, that felt like reading a Star Trek book, you know, like the twists and turns that were going through that one. And then you're like, oh, it was really a leftover Federation guy the entire time. Like, that's such a good, it's a good little plot twist.
It was a stressful episode. Great. That was a stressful episode. Like, okay, can I ask, was that episode was that episode
you may
heavily influenced by like Alzheimer's? In that sort of, in like dementia, because I have a history, my family has a history of that, and it was very stressful to watch. Like, I was like, this is exactly how this is. Like, this whole, like, that whole episode is just an incredible one-to-one, like, for that experience. And I was like, that is wild. It's so well written and so compelling. Was that at all a heavy influence on that episode?
I mean, I'd have to ask. I don't know. I'd have to ask Kirsten and Davey. They wrote Among the Lotus Eaters, but we did. I mean, even when we were talking about it in the room, we wanted to do two things. We wanted that one to feel very much like a classic original series episode, where, you know, you have a planet with something that feels familiar, but with something very off about it, you know, so this, the planet where everybody, half the population loses their memories every day, and then has a refreshing every morning, and they have totems to like tell them where they are. It's, and I think, long way to answer your question. When you lose someone to Alzheimer's, you lose the person. Mm-hmm. They stop being the person that they were. They're when they lose their memories, they become somebody that you don't recognize anymore. And the question we were asking in this episode is, when you lose your memories, do you lose who you are? Mm-hmm. I think Pike was able to hold on to who he was, almost lost who he was, but it, you know, were it not for the compass that Patel gave him at the beginning of the episode, that just kind of jogged him before the effect wore off, when he was in the area that was protected from the asteroids effect, the meteor's effect. It's really about that. It's like when you strip away all of the things that you gather and build up and define yourself as, who are you at the end of the day? And it's, I don't know the answer to that question yet. I mean, and I don't think that episode is supposed to answer that question. It's supposed to ask that question. Mm-hmm. So even if I'm not giving you a direct answer, I don't know if it was directly inspired by that, or if it was, I can't remember appropriately for an episode about memory. It is absolutely, you know, about the same questions that we ask when you know a loved one is suffering from Alzheimer's. Such a hard thing for anybody to go through. I'm sorry you've had to go through it.
No, it was just really well handled. And like, again, as a consumer of this media and being in it, and just like having Star Trek for the first time in a long time elicit like real emotional responses, to where like I, like for instance, like my mom, who's an old Trek fan, she loves what you guys have done with the Gorn. She's like, they made the Gorn cool. They, like, literally messaged me because I gave her a Paramount Plus for Christmas, and she watched the whole series in one go, just loves it. And she's like, so like a lot of the episodes that you guys have written are actually elicit like real emotional response. Like the courtroom episode, I think, is the first episode of season two, right? It's the second episode. Unbelievable writing. I generally don't much care for court episodes in the show. And that one I couldn't stop watching. It was unbelievably compelling. Like I felt a swell of just like emotions at the very end, whenever she's giving the final, and then her relationship with the lawyer, and like them going back and forth, and like at the beginning it's like, I'm doing this for me, and at the end it's like she's, you know, like just so many good layered writing moments, and then emotionally, like actually listening from your audience, real emotional responses, just like wild, incredible experience, and love it. Josh, I don't know if you agree or not, but I do.
No, I do. I wanted to get into like some of the acting, because like the acting, again, you've got phenomenal actors playing these characters, whether it be in dramatic roles or in comedic roles or in a role where they're just in the background and just doing their thing. Like I go to the charades episode where Anson's just in the background, just like, I guess I'm gonna put away the food, and like he gets all happy when they say like he liked this food, and then the mom's like blah blah blah, and he's like, oh okay, he just gets sad again, and I'm like, that stuff, like I like just those little bitty touches, because like that's like I'm sure all of that is just Anson being Anson, I'm sure. But yeah, like it's just like all the little bitty things. You have a couple new characters join the crew, which is who's the guy that's playing Scotty? Because more of him in season.
Yeah. Three. You want more Scotty in season three?
I want more Scotty in season three. That was perfection.
Martin Quinn is great. Anson. And all I think this applies to all of our actors, but Anson is such a talented comic actor, and he knows how to be a comic actor in an ensemble and support what's happening around him and elevate it. Even if that episode, he's not the focus. It's not one of his episodes, but he's great in it. And it makes the episode. And I think all of our, Rebecca is great with that too. Also, great with John. I'm biased, obviously, but kudos to our casting team for, putting together this amazing cast who are able to bend into different genres and different styles in different episodes. And Martin's fantastic. I'm glad he left an impression for his role in Hegemony at the end. I'll tell you one brief Martin Quinn story. I was in the fortunate position that I was on set in engineering on the first day that Martin came to our sets. We were shooting the we were shooting the musical episode, and Martin was, you know, on, it was his first time in from Scotland. I think it might have been his like first or second day in Toronto, and so they brought him to engineering. We were shooting there, so there I am showing Scotty, engineering. Go, oh, here's the intermix chamber. That's the warp core over there. Here's the tri console. And I'm blowing my mind that I happen to be in the position where I was, you know, the writer on set when Scotty first shows up for the first day. So I guess I'll give Scotty a tour of engineering.
Like you do.
Yeah, that's just.
And so, Josh, do you have something? Because I have so much.
Go ahead. Like, I want to talk about the Gorn. Like, that's for sure. Like, I want to talk about the Gorn and hopefully where that's going. As much as Bill can tell us, probably not a lot, but. I would also like to know.
Sorry that we left you hanging for.
Oh my gosh, you guys are the worst. You are the absolute worst. That is, I out loud screamed. I was like,
I will say that's very Star Trek of you to just leave us half the crew's gone whatever it is, and be like, oh yeah, it's like people that you
doesn't
people
make
that you've
it
grown
any less. Painful.
I know, but that's a Star Trek thing. The only thing I wish you would have like ended it as like a next gen, the bum 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 bum, like that would have been like piece of resistance. Like that would have been great, like a best of both worlds type of ending. That would have been.
I don't know if we would have done it differently, but we didn't know that we were going to be on strike for 6 months when that episode was written and shot. And it's possible we would have reconsidered ending it on such a cliffhanger if we had known that it would be a year and a, you know, however much longer it'll be between seasons. I don't know exactly how long it'll be between seasons because we're not supposed to, we don't, you know, not only would I, if I did know when season three was coming out, I wouldn't be allowed to say I don't.
It's not long.
But
I mean, we
can guess that it's going to be delayed a bit because of the fact, I mean, I don't think it's any surprise. Yeah. It might be a little longer between two and three because of the 6 month strike and everything.
So not like at the end of February is what you're saying.
It's not coming out. It's not coming out next week. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, darn. All right. Well, shoot. I tried, everybody.
I'm disappointed in you.
So why I know like we didn't really talk like we get our first glimpses of the Gorn in season one. What made you guys say, hey, let's do something with the Gorn? Like what was like the overall, was that like something, you know, back in season one where you're like, hey guys, like we're writing everything, we need to pick a big baddie for the upcoming everything, we don't want to do Klingons
because
that's a disco thing, we need something new.
And did you like go in being like, hey, we're gonna take probably arguably one of the lamest villains in Star Trek and make it the most horrifying thing we can?
I don't know, did you not see that one episode of Enterprise where there was a Gorn on board and it just stayed in the Jeffrey's tubes the entire episode and like eight
well
people?
I'm going to drill down on what Corey just said there. Taking one of the lamest villains from original series. I think if you look at Arena, you'll say that is a great episode with a guy in a rubber suit that is hampered by the limitations of its time. But it's still
sparkly,
a great story.
Yeah, it's an incredible story.
Yes,
still,
and he's got sparkly eyes and kind of loinclothy type clothing. And yet that is an episode that is unforgettable for me too. Like, I mean, it's I remember seeing, I'm a little bit older than you two, but I remember seeing that not when it aired, but like in repeats on television. And I, you know, TV entertainment didn't exist with monsters done, you know, better at that time period. So like when I was that young, I was kind of fascinated by, you know, Kirk battling like this giant lizard, and the story with the Metreons behind it. And it gave us an opportunity. It gave us an opportunity to take something that may not have gotten, you know, its best due with, in terms of costume and design and do that, you know, hopefully do stories that are equally as compelling story-wise, but with, you know, a better using all of the effects, you know, the puppetry and CG, and that was a combination of puppetry and CG effects to get our Gorn full-sized Gorn for hegemony, and hopefully in a way that's been better than it's done in the franchise. But I would still say that
there's no hopefully in this moment. You accomplished it. Those two episodes that like that deal with the Gorn, because there's two, right? There's the last in season two, and then there's the one in season one.
Well, three. There's a third one.
The beginning of this season or season two was about La'an like coming back from the Gorn.
Yeah, but that's in the past. Like, I'm talking about, like, there's two episodes that, like, in present time, they're dealing with the Gorn, right? No, she was dealing with, there was Gorn in
yeah,
that episode.
Like, yeah,
so it's three. Three episodes.
She had to go drop off Newt from season one. And I'm just sorry, that was an alien joke. So don't worry about it.
She was kind of a new, you know,
was very new.
Fun fact, that was, she did feel a little nudie. Here I am like explaining episodes. Episode four of season one and episode nine of season one were both Gorn episodes, and then we had the season finale. So it's three total. But yes, she was four if you count Broken Circle, where she's dropping off. I'm blanking on the character's name and the young actor's name who played her, but. They're fun fact. The young actress who played the girl that La'an took care of, sisters with the young actor who played the boy in Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach. They're an acting family, and they didn't know they were related until
you just cast them.
We cast him and he was great, and then she was put in our reel and she wound up being the best of all of them, and then we realized, oh my god, they're brother and sister. How crazy is that? Anyways, so that's
wild.
Brother and sister in real life. Little fun fact.
So the two episodes that I'm thinking of, which is the one where they're in the derelict ship that the engineer dies, and then the one at the very end of season two, are some of the most stressful episodes of the whole series. Like, they elicit real honest fear. Like, it's like it. I'm just like, I had to pause like the one where the chest bursting thing, which mind you, bit much, didn't need it. It was so scary. I was like, I had to pause and be like, I hate this. Oh, I hate. Okay, let's continue. Like, you guys knocked it out of the park. 100%, you did it. You made them terrifying. They're horrifying. Great job. Like, it's terrible. Yeah. It's awful. It's absolutely awful.
Have we seen adult Gorns? I mean, there was the one in the spacesuit, right? And then
that's an adult Gorn.
Everybody else has been little baby Gorns, right?
Well, we have adolescent Gorns too. We've seen a lot of adolescent Gorns.
Yeah, but we've not.
Three stages. Babies, adolescent, and then
full grown.
Yeah, I'm ready for like the big Gorns. I want that to. I'm excited for us to see like big Gorns, like not in a spacesuit. Like, I'm ready for them to be.
And it's going to be just as horrifying, and it's going to be terrifying. Like, the art design on them is incredible. Like, they really did. Yeah, you're exactly what you said, Bill. Like, they gave them their due, and nothing came off campy, which is like the best you can hope for. And when you're like bringing something into, you know, because like with Godzilla, like there was a misstep in what was it, 2009, where they're like, the iguana Godzilla didn't quite work. So bringing the Gorn into the modern era, you gave them everything they needed to make them a true villain, like a true there's stakes involved. This is scary. I feel as the audience, I'm feeling the danger that's in being incurred. And it was just like really well done. I don't know, honestly, from casting to writing, I don't know if there's anything in Strange New Worlds that has fallen short. And what I want to ask you, for me, and I don't know if this was answered in the first episode in your first interview with What a Fandom, you guys return to like the old Star Trek format of, you know, the kind of the tidy story. Every episode is you know, beginning, middle, and end, like the tidy story. It's not this overarching. Each episode is contained, and it
episodic.
Is
episodic.
Episodic, yeah. And it seems like it's the best of TNG, Voyager, and the original series, all put like the best elements of each one put into this pot. Was that intentional, or is that just like you guys are incredible writers, and that was just was going to happen?
It was absolutely intentional, and I mean that is the model that Akiva Goldsman and Henry Myers set out for the writers when we all started breaking season one. That this was a show where we were going to tell episodic stories that would allow us to have horror, like truly, you know, ghastly horror episodes, like all the Gorn episodes, and also have episodes like Charades or episodes like you know, or courtroom drama, or mm-hmm. you know, a mind-bending sci-fi premise like Among the Lotus Eaters or Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach. We get to really lean into these different genres it's a lot easier to do that in episodic storytelling. And I think where we also borrow from TNG is the original series, and this was television at the time. Everything was neatly wrapped up in that hour, so emotional arcs didn't carry forward. TNG does that, mm-hmm. And we do that. Like there are emotional arcs that carry through each season and carry over seasons as well. So you don't, you know, we end episodes, and there is a loose, you know, plot arc that goes over each season. Like the season one, the loose plot arc is Pike really confronting how he's going to deal with his ultimate fate, and you know, what does that mean? You know, if he could, you know, it all builds up to him making that choice at the end of season one. If he could change his fate and not wind up in the accident, would he do it? And he ultimately decides not to do it, not to change history. Season two has its own loose plot arc, and that is with the Gorn too. Like we see in after they steal the Enterprise, Admiral Apel's like, oh my god, they're amassing here, and it builds up to what we saw in Hegemony. So there is a loose plot serialization, but it's not so heavy that it dictates, you know, it's not serialized to the point where every episode is ending on a cliffhanger and you're waiting for the next one.
And it's also so really accessible because you can watch any episode individually and really not have to have a whole, like one of my favorite things about the show is that it's easy to introduce people to it.
Definitely.
Because you don't have to have watched all of Discovery. You don't have to have a whole bunch of Trek knowledge. You don't have to have consumed every bit of Trek that's ever existed to understand what's happening and to appreciate what's happening.
Tell everybody that, please.
Oh, no, 100%. I have been an evangelist for you guys. Like,
yeah,
100%.
I was just gonna say, season one, you have to give them a little bit of an explanation just because like some of the stuff that happened in Disco, but you can explain that in 5 minutes, and then it's like, all right, there you go. Have fun with
and also, I feel like even within the episode, they explain enough. Pike explains enough that you have what you need to know to understand the episode. I would say like the first 15 minutes, you'll be a little lost. But if you make it past, if you watch the whole episode, you'll have all the answers that you need to understand what's happening and to appreciate the stakes of what is happening.
Yeah, and we don't really talk about.
I occasionally will
I occasionally meet people who will say, "Oh, I'm meaning to watch your show, but how much other Trek do I have to watch?" And I mean, part of me wants to say, "Well, just watch it for fun," but you also don't have to watch any of it. Like that, you know, that's the idea, is that this is a show that you can a casual viewer can discover. And we have a lot of people who have deep love for Trek on the show. I mean, all of us do, but some, you know, that go back a lifetime. And so we also try to thread the needle of also having episodes reward, you know, people who love Star Trek from the beginning.
Can I say that you accomplished that? Because my mom, my mom, longtime Trek fan, one of the things she messaged me was, she's like, "Oh, T'Pring." She's always on about T'Pring. And so you've accomplished that. Like, my mom, she's, you know, old Trek fan, has appreciated the things that you've woven in. But me, who doesn't have that history, my wife, who doesn't have that history, she came in on Voyager. We still love the show just as much as my mom is loving the show. And so I feel like you've really done well. And I really hope from a deep level that this goes on for 10 seasons, like Supernatural style, where we get to see the full length, because we did do a 3-year jump from season one to season two, right? The 3-year jump with Pike's, right?
No, season one to season two. No, it's hardly a jump at all. It's a little bit of a jump.
It's like
a
little 3 months or something.
Oh,
like
is
that.
It 3 months? Yeah, like, I knew there was a three
gone
in
for
there.
Like a hot minute, and that's basically.
Yeah. Wait, there was a jump, right?
Yeah, no, there was. Una's been in a federal prison, but not for three years. Not for 3 years.
Oh, you know what I'm confusing? It's whenever they do the time jump, and he's like, "She's been in prison. She's been in exile for 7 years." That's what I'm confusing. Sorry, that's all me. It's been a bit since I finished the series. I'm waiting patiently.
There is a little bit of a jump, but it's a couple months in between one and two.
Okay.
Anyways. Okay.
My bad.
So Corey, real quick, while we're here, I'm going to come up with a new, I had it in my notes. We got the musical episode. So I'm going to check that off for What's Up Fandom, future telling there. Let's think of an episode that we need Strange New Worlds to do.
You know, what's funny, as I was going to ask Bill the same question of that, If you could write one story, either pulling from old Trek or a new one, that is not currently in the pot, that is not currently like in the ethos, which is probably difficult to even filter through, what would that episode be?
I mean, I don't know if I could say that. I wish I could.
Yeah, see, like, that's I with him being a writer, he can just kind of be like, pitch that.
Because if I said something that I want to do, what if we wound up that we're not doing? What if we wound up doing it? Then I so badly wish I could be unbridled and there's a lot that I would love to do. There is a lot. I am very excited about what we're doing for season three without saying a word about what we're doing, except that I'm excited about it. I think it's good. I'm biased, but, I'm excited about it. We are still taking big genre swings, and we are still trying to, you know, to push that envelope. I wish I could tell you. I'm sorry.
I get it. I work in this job. I get it. It doesn't make it hurt any less, but I get it. I do know my episode, Josh. I know what it would be, and it'd be impossible to do it.
Go for it.
Kung Fu movie, a Kung Fu episode. I would love that. Like, just a old style, you know, Kung Fu, like, because Kung Fu and spaghetti Western share a lot in common. That kind of thing on the Enterprise. Everybody's doing wire work. Wait, did your face shut down?
Did my face? He's reading me now. Are they doing a Kung Fu episode in season three?
Are you doing a Kung Fu episode?
Analyze Bill's face. Get the lie detector out now.
How are you going to do the wire work in all those sets?
uh, I'm waiting for them. I'm just waiting for somebody to go to Ryza, because I mean, we haven't been to Ryza in a hot minute. So I'm
waiting
for somebody.
Is Ryza even discovered yet? In this timeline,
maybe Strange New Worlds discovers Ryza.
That'd be such a weird episode. Pike on
it
Ryza.
It would be very weird, but it would be so much fun.
Oh, it's got to be Spock. It's got to be Spock trying to like suppress his emotion, because you know that's what we were doing in season two, and probably going to season three, is Spock was getting super like, I'm embracing my emotion. Chapel does what Chapel does, and then he's like, now I'm suppressing them again, and then have a Ryza episode with Spock.
Without commenting at all about one way or the other about Ryza, I will say this, that Dana Horgan, co-writer who I was lucky to write the musical with, her last name, you know, is the same as the idol. And yes, we've brought up the fact that her last name is the same as the Ryza idol, and what it means and everything. And she's like, what does that mean? No, what? Oh my God. Okay. So we, you know, we've had many discussions of without, this is no bearing whatsoever on anything that is happening.
Josh, like, do you have like those little sticks
entirely,
and you just can tell where the story is going? Is that
I've got a divining rod.
But anyways, yeah, I mean that, like anybody who loves, you know, TNG and knows Ryza knows about the Prince the Horgon, the idol, the Ryza idol. Anyways, then we have Dana Horgan, and you know, I think it's called the Horgon. And we've got a Dana Horgan, you know,
it's close enough.
Executive producer on our show.
Either that or sports.
Exactly.
Either that or sports.
What crumb is he get?
We haven't had a sports, like we had a sports DS9 episode. We had The Rock in Voyager. Like we had the MMA in Voyager. So I'm waiting. I don't know. Maybe it's cricket. Maybe they all get together and they play cricket.
You want your sports episode?
I want a sports episode. We don't get a lot of sport. We've had what, two sports episodes of Star Trek ever? We're due for a sports episode.
Right. You're thinking of Take Me Out to the Holosuite.
Yeah.
The DS9 one where they mm-hmm. play the logicians.
They play the Vulcans. Yeah.
The Niners play the Vulcan logicians.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great. I love that episode.
And then, yeah, and then like 7 of 9 beats up The Rock. No, The Rock beats up 7 of 9. Somebody beats somebody up in the Voyager one. That's the only thing I remember.
I have another episode idea. And I don't know if this has been done in Star Trek, because again, I haven't consumed Star Trek. Like Voyager, I think, is where the last like bit of Star Trek where I was like, and then after that, I was like, this is not as good. And then Discovery, I was like, I was still scorned. And so then Strange New World came out, and I was like, we have been saved. I did like the movies, though. Unpopular opinion, I love the movies. An episode dealing with a prototype holodeck. Is there an episode that deals with a prototype holodeck? Because you know how, like, the holodeck technology is like, we have to make it to where it can't kill you? I was like, what if, like, the original prototype can kill you? And, like, that's where the Discovery's like, we need to put some safety measures in this thing. Josh, tell me. You're making a face, Josh. Has there been an what? They had one like that dealing with
Balana's is the holodeck, basically all the safety features.
No, I know that. I know that. I'm talking about like dealing with the prototype. My wife has now joined the chat.
I don't think we've had a prototype holodeck one before. The holodeck has always been very confusing to me. Like It's like a 10x10 cube that people can get lost. There could be like 17 people in one holodeck program and they could all get lost for hours. I don't understand it. It still boggles my mind how that works. Like there's the next gen episode where they're trying to find Geordi and they're like, all right, let's split up. And I'm like, it's the holodeck. Just say computer in program and you found him. He's right there. Like the holodeck is just a mystery to me. I still don't understand how it works.
I always rationalized in my brain that actually they're just asleep, like it's full dive.
It's the matrix.
And so like they're all just like, so it suspends the gravity. They're all just floating in a room, and they're unconscious. And that's how you can do the spatial stuff without it, like
that
having
makes
to be
everything
able to...
Barkley does just really weird. All right, so Bill, thank you for coming on.
It was a pleasure. It was a pleasure coming on and. saying nothing about season two, although now I feel like people are going to assume that we're doing a Ryza episode just because I mentioned a dumb writer's room joke. But I feel like no matter what I say now, like people will theorize about that. It was just a dumb writer's room joke. That was
listen. I'm convinced there's a Kung Fu episode. That's all I know. I'm
convinced if we go by all the wonderful stuff.
Or how do you know there's not a cricketing episode?
Kung Fu cricket episode.
I'm ready for cricket. Like that would be a fun one. But no, like if we're going by, you know, just regular Star Trek, we need a somebody's gonna die and then gets brought back to life in the course of 40 minutes. We need they get turned into kids at some point.
That's
always a fun one. Have we met Tribbles yet?
There's a very short trek about Tribbles. Very short treks and short treks are different. Pardon me. There's a short trek about Tribbles with H. John Benjamin and I'm forgetting the actress's name. She's really good. She is on that Amazon animated show. And she was on Brand New Cherry Flavor. Anyways, there is a short treks. If you need a Tribbles fix, check out the short treks about Tribbles.
We all need Tribbles. And then we need to go back in time at some point. So that needs to happen. We got to go back in time because that's just a staple. That's just a Star Trek staple.
We have done that a few times now.
Yeah. By the way, we kind of didn't talk about that episode. I really liked what you guys were doing with like Kirk and La'an. Like I thought that was like very cool. And then you guys ruined it. But
what? No, they didn't. They made it way more compelling.
Kirk's already with Carol Marcus, and I don't like that. Yeah, and she's but they're pregnant? Really.
Yeah, because that's we all know Kirk is actually a dirtbag. Okay, we all know it.
I don't think that kid's gonna last very long.
They confirm, okay, so 100% Bill, that is a confirmation of something that's been in the Trek universe for forever, right? That's what that was. It's like, because my mom brought that up to me. She was like, they finally confirmed the thing we all thought. And so...
It's stated out loud in I mean, listen, this is just me knowing too much about Star Trek, but there's a whole conversation about it in The Wrath of Khan, where Carol says, you had your life and I wanted him in mine. And it's very explicitly stated that they had an agreement that he was not going to be part of the kid's life. And when you do the math on that, he would have been Paul Wesley's age in that episode when she was pregnant and we realized, Kirk would really be an asshole if he had a fling with La'an without telling her that.
But it's not out of Kirk's personality, like, to be honest.
People say that about Kirk, but I think when you take a closer look, like he's a little more. He's not as much of a dog as the reputation that he has. He has romances, but he's not. You know,
he's no Will Riker. Let's be real.
He's not like Will Riker goes there.
Yeah, he does. Yes, he does.
He's not as horny as Will Riker. That is correct.
I don't think anyone is as horny as Will.
No one can be. No one can achieve that goal or would ever want that goal. I don't know.
But no, Bill, thank you so much for coming on. This was fun. And when we're actually done with season three, and then when we can talk about the cricket episode.
Yes.
Or
can't wait.
Bill, where can people find you if they want to follow your work? Weird way to say that. Like.
Bill, I'm on Instagram. Bill Wears Ties at Instagram. And I'm on X at flying_lobster. I'm also on Threads, same Instagram handle as on Threads. So any one of those places, you can find me lurking around.
And you've got Kipo on Netflix. You've got Strange New Worlds on Paramount Plus. Anything else that's in the works or anything that you wanna talk about?
My life is still fully in season three, so that's like, you know, that's what's out, or I mean, we're working on. But yeah, nothing. None of the irons in my fire are nearly as ready to go as what you've already talked about. That's about it.
Corey, what about you?
I've got a movie that I'm shooting in April, but you can find me all at Corey J. Phillips on all platforms. One of them might be Corey J. Phillips 07 because Corey J. Phillips was taken, but whatever. You can find me all that. Also, watch MF Ghost, the Initial D sequel on Crunchyroll.
Yeah, and you can find the podcast on Instagram at What's Up Fandom, on Twitter at What's Up Fandom, PC for podcasts. Download the episodes wherever you download podcasts. I think you can rate and review on Spotify. Like, Spotify is cool because it'll let you do like individual episodes. So like, instead of like Apple where you just do like the full like podcast, you can do like an individual episode. And I think that's cool. So you could do that if you would like to. We're on everything, everywhere that you download podcasts, TikTok, all those places. And yeah, we've got some stuff coming up that I'm very excited about. Can't tell you, because I have a thing, like, I don't like talking about stuff until it's recorded, just in case something happens. So there's stuff in the works that I'm really excited about that we've got planned coming up soon. So ready for that. And Bill, in season four, if you need two people to like get blown up on a shuttle bay, in a shuttle, Corey and I, like, if you just need to kill people before the, like in the cold open, like we are there. Like,
okay,
I'll get murdered. Like, I am fine with that.
All right. I will
prostrate myself before you.
I've got an active visa. I mean, not visa. I've got an active passport. I can go wherever can you run. Need me. We can hop the border to Canada.
Yeah,
it'll be fine.
Listen, if by season four I wield enough power on the show to decide who gets to come on to die, I'll you know, try to hook you up. But I don't wield that much power on Strange World.
No. We'll put it out there. You never know. Maybe it's like a musical episode. but again, Bill, Corey, thanks so much for coming on and talking some Trek.
Nice to meet you, Corey. Good seeing you as always, Josh.
All right, so for What's Up Fandom, I'm Josh.
I'm Corey.
I'm Bill.
Hi, everybody.